We're interviewing today Mary J. Ford, who is a member of the Women's Overseas Service League San Antonio Unit, San Antonio, Texas. And this is January the 13th, 2004. She's being interviewed by Ruth F. Stewart, assisted by Carol Hapgood. Mary, tell us a little bit about your early life as you were growing up.
I was born in a little town, Ambia, Indiana. My grandfather was quite a successful farmer. He had a large farm and had three thrashing rings. So that was pretty good in those days. And also had a hardware in this little town. And when he died, my father took over the hardware store. And my mother inherited the farm. And this is something, my mother was a petite, quiet person. And my sister and I didn't know until we were many, many years later that my grandfather hadn't left Aunt Ida anything because of something she had done. And my mother gave her half of the farm.
And that's something.
And my mother never said a word, and I'm sure had been me, I'd have told someone every other week, you know, that I gave my sister half the farm. That was my mother. So, and so then later on, during the Depression years, and my father probably needed the money, she sold her half the farm. I said I never want to know what she got for it because it wasn't much, I'm sure. But my aunt saved that farm and later on left it to my sister and I, which was very nice.
So it came back to you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then throughout the years, my sister was 4 years older and went to Harper Hospital in Detroit to nurses training. And I had always, in my mind, you know, thought that would be wonderful to be a nurse. And so I couldn't, when it came time for me to go into nursing, I couldn't go into Harper because I wasn't 18 until the 18th of October, and the class started in September. And so some of my classmates from school were going into nursing training in Kankakee, Illinois, where we live. And so that's where I went for the diploma program.
So. And what did you think about your days in the nursing school?
Oh, really terrific. I had twice the length of time in the operating room that you normally have because the nun got sick. It was a charge, and they had a temporary person in there. And one of the staff nurses got sick, and so I had a lot of time, which increased my interest. And when I left training, I went to Harper Hospital to work, and was in the operating room there. I was in the operating room for 8 years at Harper Hospital in Detroit. So that was quite an experience. A very busy operating room. We were running about 100 cases a day way back then.
And when did you get interested in Army?
The Harper Hospital in World War II had a unit, the 17th General, and they were stationed at Dijon, France. And so at the beginning of World War II, the unit was activated, the 17th General, and that's how I became involved with that. In fact, almost five or six nurses went with the unit, and that's quite a draw on their staff in the operating room when the youngest nurse had been there about 2.5 years, so that's a pretty stable staff, and we really, you know, gave good service. And and then there was a staging period up at Camp McCoy, Wisconsin, for some time before they went to That's wonderful.
You were with the unit to when it went to Casablanca?
Oh, yes.
And what kind of
service we left the Camp McCoy. It was interesting. It was about a two-day, two-night train trip over to Newport News, which is the port of embarkation. It was called Camp Patrick Henry. And people saying that some woman sold that land to the government, you know, for that. We said she must have hated her son because the mosquitoes were so bad. So we staged there, and I think we were staged there for 9 days. And then we left and went to Casablanca. And we sailed on the Empress of Scotland, and it was a beautiful ship. And because of the size of it, and it went fast, we weren't in a convoy. We didn't have to zigzag, that sort of thing. And it had been previously called the Empress of Japan, but the British had changed the name to the Empress of Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
And, but of course, it sounds glamorous, but some of the staterooms were, you know, about three decks high, about 40 in a room or something like that. But when they're assigning the rooms, the places, you know, ready to go, came along Ford and Floodquist, or Floodquist Ford, a small cabin of it was just two. And everyone thought that was so wonderful. Well, you'd wake up in the middle of the night and your close friends were in there washing, you know. Rather than being in this big room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my, it was really very interesting. So,
so how long did it take you then to get?
We were
on the ship.
So far back, now I had to review some of these notes. But we 8 days, 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
And and then traveling was very interesting. And the British are pretty gung ho about meals and things like that, feast for breakfast. And but then it went really very well. And then when we got to Casablanca, there was a staging area outside of Casablanca, Anal Turk, and actually it was called the Don B. Passage, and it was named after someone who had been injured in some earlier war.
And what is the staging area?
It's where we were held until we were to go forward. In fact, they were telling us that, excuse me, that we were waiting until the Sicilian campaign was over before the Allies went into Salerno. But that was, so we stayed down there all that time. And we didn't go in immediately, but very soon afterwards.
Then you went to Salerno from there?
No, we sailed into the Naples area, a port right next to Naples. And then Mussolini had built this large hospital, quite a big complex. I've forgotten how many acres. And the British had arrived a few days before, and they had a couple of buildings. The Knights of somebody or other had, the Italians had a building to take care of what they could do with their own people. And which is very little because they didn't get supplies. And then we had a couple of buildings, and we had the pest house. And eventually the British offices had been, it had been cleaned up, you know. But as soon as they moved out, that was the nurses' quarters. And the British had arrived before, and so they had the nurses' quarters. And we thought, oh dear, you know. Well, just a few days, we were happy that we didn't have it. As long as the Germans had gas, they liked to bomb the port, you know, to to bomb the ships, to destroy the supplies. And of course, then our ATAC went up to shoot the Germans flying over. And whether it was from the Germans or our ATAC, went in the building and hit this British nurse in the femoral, and she died. So, and here we're up in the operating room. The windows looked out on the American cemetery there. And here the British soldiers went and a group of them measured tread, you know, and then they paused, and then one by one they went over at an angle to the grave and saluted and then walked on out. We were really impressed.
Very impressive.
Very, very dramatic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, and the building that the operating rooms were in was amusing. Like on the first floor, there'd be an operating room on the one end, and then on the second floor, on the opposite end, on the third floor, on the opposite end, on the fourth floor. So if the, probably if the building got bombed, they might save an operating room. So.
What kind of patients were you getting there?
The 95th of VAC had been in that building for a couple of weeks before we got there. They later went up to Anzio. And so they had been taking care of a large number of patients for that small group of people. It's amazing. And so there were, the war was going on, so your war injuries, you know.
You had the combatants.
Montgomery was coming up from southern Italy, and Clark was coming in to Salerno and moving their way up the boot. And so, and war patients. So.
From all of European fronts, was that it? Your patients?
Well, just Italy. You know.
Yeah, just from Italy, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
They hadn't started France yet. So.
Okay.
So, the war was going on up there, but we were coming up from this way.
What were the major injuries that you were involved with?
We had everything, you know, from routine debris knots to everything. But now, the ones, chests and bellies and everything. So, and one that I was so impressed with, this patient had been in, hadn't been able to evacuate him for a while, so he had a not only a hip spike, but up the shoulder of a spike also. And so when they brought him in the outfit to take all the casts off and stuff like that, naturally there were maggots, which is fine, it was eating some of the necrotic tissue, but there was so much damage, they weren't able to save a leg.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were a Detroit outfit, and this boy was from Detroit. And so, and when they talked to him that they weren't going to be able to save the leg, he said, well, I guess I'll just have to go into law then, you know, it was really very touching.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a nurse, how did you feel about having to care for these patients that were so young and so injured?
I don't know, you know, it's amazing how you talk to them. You didn't talk down to them in any way. You talk to them like you would talk to anybody from back home. And so they were there to be taken care of. And so,
mm-hmm.
But I must tell you, before we got into our permanent place to live, they put us up in the auditorium of this big building. And I brought a picture along. There were 111 women, cot after cot, row after row, really just solid. It was hardly able to walk, you know. And they tried to fix it so it'd stagger like head to feet, you know. But then on the wall, looking down over the Bay of Naples and south towards Vesuvius, that way it was beautiful, you know. But when the Germans started to come over the hospital to go down to bomb the harbor, they made us go down the tunnel because if glass broke, you know, in that front, that wall there would be very bad. And so, but then you went down the tunnel and the sand fleas and stuff like that, you know, you had to go down there, so.
And then when you moved into your permanent quarters, what were they?
Well, it had been well, they called it the pest house, and they had contagious disease. It was a regular three-story small building. And my two friends and I happened to get a utility room. And it was sort of an L-shaped utility room. And so here there are three beds in there. Well, that's a little crowded. There was a dumbwaiter, and someone had given me a German flag, so I put that over the dumbwaiter. And then Edna knew someone down at the port, and the Germans had left some wooden double-deckers. And so she and her friend brought two up, and so the way they... we put the men back next to the wall that had windows. And, of course, naturally, since Edna brought them, I got the upper deck. And and so that saved us space. We had just that and one other bed. Mm-hmm. And but then when it wasn't too good to have your windows, as the Germans would fly over that. So when our own ACAC would start sending up, you know, you never know where some of the old pieces are going to go. So you're really supposed to get out the tunnel. So.
And what about your eating? And
when we first landed, the fellows cooked outside on the field stoves, and then we ate and would go through to take care of our mess gear. And at that time, the Italians were still roaming all around the area. You know. And they would want whatever was left in your mess gear. And you didn't want them to get a tin can, you know, and the stickers on it just scraped, and you didn't want them to get your mess gear any dirtier than it was. But it's best for you to dump it in there when you got used to that, because, and then there was a big brush that you put your mess gear in that first soapy water, you know, big 50-gallon drums, you know, and then two rinse ones. And then you better close it up when you did that to keep it cleaner for the next meal. So. And then afterwards, when we got settled, we had a regular mess hall. You know. And one of our doctors had been in the Surgeon General in World War I, and it was very interested in cooking. So he was a surgeon, but he gave them a lot of good tips, you know, about how to make things taste better. You know. Like add a little dry mustard to something, you know, different things like that. So,
what kind of recreation then did you have there, other than viewing the Bay of Naples?
After a short time, we were allowed to go down in downtown Naples. The first little section was called the Bomero section, and on downtown Naples, of course, we were shopping, and then there were what they call a PBS club, a base section club down in a bank in downtown Naples. And then up on a hill, there was a lovely club with beautiful view, you know, of the ocean. And it was called the Orange Club, the Giardina degli Aranci, the Garden of the Oranges. And the food was good and very nice. So he was downtown Naples, and he was the club up here in the hill. But down here, you know, we worked hard, and as you go out for dinner and stuff like that, you do the shortcut to go home, you know, you direct them out to get home faster. You got to know Naples pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you travel much in the area?
Well, later on, you know, when you had the quiet times and stuff like that, there was Sorrento, you know, down the Amalfi Drive, and I really, other than sightseeing right around Naples and stuff like that, on up the hill a little ways, there was a marble Davenport, you know, and that had been a space where people when they were showing them Naples, they'd bring them up in the hill to see the panorama of Naples. Mm-hmm. Like, to see Naples, I guess the ultimate, you can see die. You can die then, you know. Do you think we're taking too much tape on?
No, that's okay. That's fine. I don't want to.
Anyhow,
good to hear about
and near, right there was a monastery, and these monks had these robes of woven, maybe yarn out of the wool. And so I went up there with two of our doctors one time, and of course I sat on the bench while they were taken through to, because I, of course, naturally I wouldn't be allowed to go in. And but
why weren't you allowed to go in?
Well, it's a monastery, men.
I see.
Men, priests. Mm-hmm. So
you didn't get to
beautiful.
See that.
And then later on, we had some friends on up the hill. They established a large hospital, the 300th General Hospital.
How long were you in Naples area or in Italy?
I was in, I had been there, I don't know, about a year maybe. They started, they were preparing the ships, you know, for southern France. And then, I don't know if you're familiar with the Second Auxiliary Surgical Group. It's an organization that has teams like orthopedic, neuro, all the different specialties. And then they supply the teams where they're needed to the different Lillivac hospitals. And then these Lillivac hospitals, as the lines move up, they leapfrog, you know. And the teams are pulled wherever they're needed. And so when they were preparing for southern France, they sent half of the Second Auxiliary Surgical Group up to France and replaced them with teams from existing hospitals in Italy. So when they called the 78th General Hospital for a team, this wonderful surgeon said, "I've been sitting here too long, I want to go up and see what's going on." So he selected a very good surgeon for an assistant, a very good anesthesiologist, a very good nurse, King, and two very good OR techs. And we went up and as a replacement team up there. And we were stationed most of the time with the 94th Evac. And usually when a team went out, they had their own tent and stuff. The team suggested what I named, you know. A surgeon, assistant, anesthesiologist, a nurse, and two corpsmen. But the nurses would have their own tent. Well, since I was, this was an unusual situation, they just put me in with a neurosurgical team, a nurse, and the nurse anesthetist.
And this was where, located where?
Up further north.
But in Italy?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
See, the line was moving up.
Mm-hmm.
And where can I give you an idea of where we were? Each time we would move, we would be a different, like we call it the Grapevine area or the Dust Bowl area, where we were stationed. And I know the first time we moved, you hurried over. There was an Italian house. You hurry over with your dirty clothes, possibly lavar, you know. And so they were very friendly. Well, by the time you got back, so many people had pushed them. They weren't so friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my! So it was the interest of that commander of that hospital. Was excellent, and he was a wonderful commander. The only thing that we didn't like about him, he and his first sergeant would get out to explore where they want to move next. He always wanted to be the most forward when they leapfrog, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very, very.
Because that was an impressive thing.
Oh yes, uh-huh. And then We always got the big cases. We never got routine debris mods. They always get a towel and like the big chests and bellies and things like that. And then as the other men would finish their little debris mods, they'd come over and look over Cal's shoulder to see what he was doing. He was really very good. So it was very nice. And then he wanted me to teach the boys more about so they could really need somewhat for scrubbing, because some of these cases lasted a long time. And in our spare time, if we had some time, we'd like sit on the grass with a tablet, and I'd explain the different closures, so they understand the anatomy. And then when I'd have them scrubbed, you'd go in and you'd set up your meal stand with sterile supplies and your instruments, and then you put all your drapes on top of that. That was enough. That's how you approach a big case. And with them, I always gave them a lot more time. When I'd scrub, I'd do it in a hurry. So I'd go in there, I forgot some shods there for wire sutures. And they said, what's the matter, sis? You forget something,
Teasing you.
Love to kid you. So, yes, I'm talking a lot.
That's what this is all about. So then you were with that surgical team.
Mm-hmm.
Was that for the rest of your time there in Italy? Or
then after we moved different times, and at one time we were moving to a new location and in a convoy. Every time we moved, we'd usually would have required a crate of something, that we could use for a bedside table, for our cot or something like that. And the colonel said every time we moved, it took more trucks to move it. We had to get rid of some of those things. And so we're going along up the mountains, and whether it was from natural or bombing or something like that, some big rocks came down and blocked off the road. And so we were held up until they got it all cleared away for us to move. And it just so happened there was a special service truck just behind us. Had a piano on it, and the fellows were really having a good time, entertaining us and stuff like that. And here you've got a full truckload of women. Pretty soon, what's going to happen. Somebody's got to go to the John. So how do you handle that? So, we handle that real easy. We huddled around in a circle, and they used their own helmet, Oh, my.
What year was all this?
Well, 43, and let's see. We arrived in Casablanca on the 15th of September, that's 43, and then we're in Naples in October of 43. When we went by boat from Iran to Naples, it was a smaller ship, and when we got within so far, so close to the shore, not that close, but. Germans could down planes and they're that close to bomb a ship, So they wouldn't let us go up topside, So for our own protection, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got there, we were able to get off into barges and taken on in. But several nurses had gone in. Their pictures were in the paper going over the side of the ship, rope ladders. And there was a picture that looked just like me, and everybody at home knew it was me. It wasn't me.
So then,
when you ask about entertainment, in Naples, they kept the opera going all the time because that was good entertainment. And it was really very dramatic. We would go down to an opera, and of course, Butterfly was a very popular one, and Full Moon. And but before the opera started, they played the national anthem of all of our allies, you know. And you stood at attention while they played the American, the British, the I think there were five different
points.
The French, of course, had gone along with us at that time, and
eventually the China or yeah,
no,
China.
No. They were some other part of the world, you know. But anyhow, it was really very dramatic. Mm-hmm. And then the music was pretty, and that is light. And when they played Un Bel Di, you know, it was so pretty, and the soldiers applauded, so they stopped and repeated that aria the way they went on.
Mm-hmm.
But Naples visited Pompeii, and I never saw any of the pornographic stuff, you know, because I was traveling with a small group, and I knew that wasn't in good taste for me to be there. So I sat on some big stone while they toured the pornographic part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you ever regret not seeing what it was all about?
No. So, but it's just amazing when you think of some of the early mosaic work on the floors and things like that in those early days.
So how long were you in Italy?
Well, let's see, we got into Italy in October of 43, and I came home in October of 45.
Two years.
See, I'm glad I wrote these notes down. I never would have remembered. And it's due to a good friend of mine who keeps good notes. But one time, during the end of the war, right at the beginning, you know, when I was leaving Naples to go up, my mother died, and my sister, not realizing, utilizing Red Cross, you know, she sent me word, it was about 2 weeks before I heard about my mother's death. And so, of course, my father wrote to me and said, you know, there's no need to come home, you know, that he was fine and all that sort of stuff. But then, later on, my father was killed in an accident.
So you lost both of them?
That was hard.
And that was while you were gone? So you spent the entire war there in Italy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until after the war in Europe was over.
I really am. It's very interesting. I went back for a second tour. This is after World War II. I was home for a year, and I went in the office of Percy Jones General Hospital in Battle Creek, Michigan, and there was a thing on the bulletin board for Italy, a list for Italy. So I said my name like a boob, and Adam said, let all the rest, you know. I said, Eileen, my good friend, she'll want to go too. Well, she has to come over and sign her own name, you know. I called, Eileen, there's a list on the bulletin board for Italy. So we went back to Italy for a tour of duty.
Re-enlisted or?
No,
we were still in the okay.
The whole time, so.
Okay. And what did you do then when you went back to Italy?
We were assigned into the Livorno area, a station hospital just a few miles south of Leghorn, and Eileen and I were both operating room nurses, and the operating room staff was staffed at that time when we went in, and she was put in on the officer's ward, and I was in one of these things. It was like an old barracks. One section, like cream surgery, the next section, orthopedics, the next section, that way. You know. And then down here's the kitchen and all that sort of stuff. So, and it was a busy time. And then that time, I don't really want to get into this at this time because we still haven't finished the war yet. So. I don't know if I could tell you about up north in northern Italy. I have some pictures in here of crossing a pontoon bridge, and over the Po River, pretty wide river.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just more of being busy, when we were in this one area, I was dating a fellow, and he thought our team should we should take them in. We were just north of Florence at that time, and that wouldn't they like to go in for an evening at the officers' club? Fine.
Yeah, so, this was in your first tour there.
During the war.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're back to the war.
Yeah.
Thanks. So you drive with in the mountainous area with cat's eyes, and two of these men on our team had new babies they hadn't seen, and they were interested in staying in good health, and they were really scared, really. They said they enjoyed the evening, but they didn't want to go back in anymore.
Yeah.
We're back to I missed telling about the train trip from the staging area out of Casablanca to go up through a Rabat and to Oran, waiting to go to Naples. Well, so before we got on, the day before we went down and scrubbed the compartments we were going to sleep in, and supposedly there were just going to be four to a compartment, but there was five in our tent, and so they... we're figuring out how we're going to do this. And then fortunately, I said, one of our tent mates got sick, and so there were four of us. And we put barracks bags underneath the tent, cots in the center, so we could stretch across that way for us, which is comfortable. And then it was really amusing. Every time anybody wanted to wash up a little bit, they'd get a helmet, and bring in. And because there was no other place to clean up. Just about that time, a train would come along, Oh, my. So, it was interesting. And then, while we were traveling on the train would stop, and they would prepare the food on a field stove, and we would eat any place, on the rails or any place where we wanted to eat, and then clean up our mess there and get back on the train again. And one night, Betty Hughes had to go to the bathroom, and she got up, and she came back in, and she said, there's a cow on the train. Now, I don't know how they ever got that cow on the train, but there was a Berber there in his brown, striped robe, and I had a gun, and he and his cow were down the end of our thing. Well, she can't go that way, and there's no connection. Well, the next thing, you'd have to climb over things to get in the next thing. And finally, they came to a stop, and they got that cow and the Berber off the train. I don't know how I got on by myself.
Interesting.
Yeah. With a gun,
Yeah.
Berber from the mountains, so mm-hmm. There's so much that I don't know about, the different, the Berbers, I'm not familiar with their background, but their mountain troops, I know.
They were fighting forces then.
I don't know what they were.
Oh.
I don't know what it was. I don't know what he was doing there. So, Oh, my.
I thought maybe the cow was to provide you milk for your meals.
That cow was would be an expensive thing for him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. His worldly assets. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then when you came back in October of 45, you stayed in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And
we had signed a paper as to whether you wanted to stay in or not, you know. And I thought, well, I wasn't in any hurry to get out, because when I left Harper, you know, we were doing 100 cases a day, and I thought, I'll just stay in the Army a little while and see what happens. So they gave us 45 days leave, not accountable to leave time, and then I had orders to go to Percy Jones, and that's, I was there for a year, and that's when the list came up on the boat for to go back to Italy. So.
And what was the difference in being there in Italy during the war versus after the war?
Well, we were just doing our normal work, you know, and taking care of patients in a hospital. So.
You didn't have any, feel any real difference there?
No. It just allowed us in our off-duty time to do more things to see Italy.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, but when it came time for the phase-out campaign, when they were going to close the hospital, they sent three nurses down from Germany to help us do this. Well, they'd never been to Italy before, so you know, we could take some time off. And so I said, let's go down so we can take a train to Rome and have a few hours there before we catch the next train down to Naples, you know, because I knew Naples pretty well, you know. And so that was wonderful. We had these times and went out to the Vatican. And so I told this guide, I said, now, I want these girls to see as much as they can in a short period of time. So try to do that. So he'd go and start on the wonders of Italy, you know, and I'd have to go, you know, it just killed him to think that he couldn't dwell on these wonderful things he wanted to tell everybody about.
Did you speak Italian?
No, enough. You all in that country, you go to, you know, your hair is too curly or too reachy, or your multiposana, you look too large, you know, too heavy, and those basic things. And where's the gabinet, and where's the John, you know, all basic things, so.
Okay, and so how long were you in the service then, totally?
20 years, I was so old when I went in, and I had to get out at 20 years as a major. And so I knew that wasn't enough for me to live on, so I...
What year was that?
62, you know, 20 years.
19.
Yeah.
42 to 62.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
And then that's when I got out, and so I went to Europe and vacationed for several months. It was cheap living, you know, at that time. It was wonderful. I couldn't have done it at a better time.
You mean in Italy?
In Italy, uh-huh.
You vacationed there before
Italy,
you came
in Germany,
home.
And,
Germany.
Some friends of mine were up in Germany, and a colonel and his wife that I'd had duty with, and I left extra luggage with them, and then would take off to different places. And but then when I came back, and I was visiting at home and visiting some friends, and a former chief nurse of mine was a chief nurse at Brook. She asked me what I was going to do, and I said, well, I was going to get a job someplace. They had asked me to come back to Harper, to the operating room, because I was a good operating room nurse.
Mm-hmm. And so I thought, now, I have to tell them nicely, because I might need to come back. And I said, I was thinking in terms of a more moderate climate. Well, it so happened it worked out that they had a vacancy for a civilian operating room nurse at Brook. And so Colonel Seymour said, go and fill out the forms. And I worked 7 years there in the operating room for civil service. And then they changed the supply job to a civilian. And would I go? And sure. Yeah. I said, no call, no shift duty. The status was better. And the operating nurse was so happy that I went, because one of those would have had to have gone had I objected. So, so 12 years. And so actually, 40 years in nursing, 32 were in the operating room. And the operating nurse was so happy that I went, because one of those would have had to have gone had I objected. So, 12 years. And so actually, 40 years in nursing, 32 were in the operating room.
Mm-hmm. A notable career. You really liked the operating room.
Oh, yeah.
The excitement of it, or the speed of it, or...
Well, you're good. Mm-hmm. You're good in what you do. Mm-hmm. And you know what to do. We've never really finished up the World War II phase. When it was come time to come home, I have a snapshot to get a hop down to Naples to be able to get a go on to Casablanca and going home. And so we were there a few days, and of course we were in wool uniforms, and it was hot in southern Italy at that time. And so they said, well, we'd like to go to Capri to go to the fine. So we went to Capri just for the day. And now, of course, they use the hydrofalls to go over it. It's easier, but then it was, rough. And this nurse I was traveling with got a little seasick. And when you get over there, you go on to get on a small, like a rowboat type thing, to go down to the Blue Grotto. Have you been to Italy?
But not to those places.
And so when you get near the opening to go into this Blue Grotto, and then you wait for the proper waves, and you sort of duck and go in.
Mm.
And so sometimes some of these wealthy tourists are traveling, and if they get splashed with water, they might be a little indignant. So the fellow who runs the boat will say, you've been blessed, and that makes them feel happy, they've been blessed. Well, this friend of mine, she was so seasick, she blessed the Blue Grotto. So, then when we got a flight to go to Casablanca, we were offloaded there for several days because they were bringing prisoners of fellows who'd been prisoners of war. So they were offloading us for them to get home sooner. So. And I have a picture of some of these fellows there. So. I can't think of anything right now.
Okay, then. What about your time servicing combatants that you had for 2 years in Italy, with the taking care of the soldiers and
you're scrubbed with a team,
Yeah, you're working with the scrub team, so you didn't have the same kind of contact with the soldiers as you might have had if you'd been in their post-surgical floor.
Yeah. But you usually wander around and talk to the fellows afterwards.
You did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Did your work there, your experience there, affect you in any way about your view of war?
Yeah. We didn't start it. Look what Hitler did. How people were killed. I think when someone tried to kill him, He had 5,000, you know, when they had that portfolio down here? I think that he had 5,000 people killed as a penalty for that. He wasn't a very good man. So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then when you came back here to Brooke Army Medical Center, did you, as a civilian, did you join any veterans organizations?
Really not at that time. It was sometime before I joined the American Legion. And there were so many women in it, too. They said, you will join. So we joined. But at that time, they had a very active operating room organization, operating nurses at that time, and you really enjoyed going. They had good people speaking. And one I've never forgotten, I think his name was Dr. Glass. He's the foremost authority on snake bites in the country. He's dead now. And but he was really terrific. And lectures, pictures, and what to do and all that sort of stuff. So.
So you've had a very interesting and rewarding career, it sounds like.
Well, it seems like every place you're stationed and you're leaving, you're sad at leaving, you know. Yeah, you hate to go, and then I'll launch you at some new place, and you're loving that. You know, comes time to go, you're sad leaving.
Well, this has been very, very interesting information, and I certainly thank you for your time in doing this, Mary.
So.